when you're riding after rattlesnakes, you gotta be tough. You gotta be rough. You gotta shoot straight. Be on the lookout. The James Gang is back in town, and they're meaner than ever. There's Brother Eli. He stomped down many a snake in his day, and he ain't done yet. His younger brother Dave, quicker than a horned toad, he can hunt down a snake's lie. Then there's Sister Jean. She can whip out a scripture faster than a Colt 45. Wanted, dead or alive, they'll be coming for you. It's the James Gang on EuroFolkRadio.com.
Welcome, Christian Israel, white patriots all over this crazy planet of ours called Earth. This Jew-run planet of ours. Welcome to One-to-One. And today we're going to be focusing on all things Jewish again, but primarily the hyperinflation in Germany and the consequences leading to the rise of Adolf Hitler and Jewish control of German society, during the Weimar Republic. But first, David James has an announcement or something to share with us. Over to you, David.
Yeah, I wish you wouldn't use such hateful speech. You said the word Jewish.
Yeah.
And, you know, that that really bothers me, you know.
Right.
You know, you should be more careful with your speech, you see.
Yeah, right.
The word Jewish offends a lot of people, you understand.
Yeah, even Jews. It's amazing that the word Jewish offends Jews. I don't understand that. At all.
Yeah, well, you know, try to be more careful. No wonder YouTube wants to get rid of people like us. I mean,
right.
Listen to the hate speech that you just committed.
Listen to the hate speech. Listen to the hate speech. All right.
It's so ridiculous. It really is.
It sure is.
Okay, really what I want to say is the reason why this is relevant is because the Weimar Republic was a democracy.
Oh,
now,
right.
Right? This is how they inflated the money and everything.
You're correct.
And that's exactly, as I've been looking through these headlines and things like that and reading a few little things, they talk about it being a democracy. And you see, democracy, the Weimar Republic would be an absolute example of what happens to democracies.
That's right.
And how vulnerable they really are. Okay, but here's what I want to say. As I'm reading Saul Alinsky's book, I have told you, I'm going to make this quick too, but this has everything to do with it. Because the revelation that Yahweh revealed to all of us on a couple of shows ago has everything to do with this. This is something I want my dear white brothers and sisters to understand. Okay, first of all, I told you that democracy instantly divides a nation. I knew that part.
Yes.
But what Yahweh taught me was something very, very important. See, I learned it through reading Saul Alinsky's books, where he talks about the haves and the have-nots. And so I want to tell you that in the first part of the book, he talked about his father, Lucifer. And he prayed.
Right.
No, he did. He praised him.
Yeah, I remember you reading that.
He was the Yeah, he was the first rebel to go against the establishment. Okay, so the establishment, what establishment did Lucifer or Halel, what establishment did he go against? Well, it's the heavenly father's kingdom.
Yeah, honest money. Yahweh's honest money, exactly.
So this Jew is praising him for that.
Right.
What does that tell you? Eli, go ahead and tell me what that tells you alone, just that alone.
Oh, yeah, well, that his father is the devil, Halel. It's pretty simple. Saul Alinsky.
But it tells you, as with all Jews, it tells you he's against the establishment of heaven.
That's right. Exactly. So that, as was Hillel. That's why he was kicked out of heaven.
Okay. Yeah. So the next thing is, in his book, he teaches, he's teaching radicals. He's teaching people to be radicals against the earthly establishment of Yahweh's kingdom, the Israelite nations. And when I say Israelite, you know what I'm talking about, but it's the white nations. We are Yahweh's offspring. They are coming into our lands, and they are going against the establishment, rebelling, and he's teaching people, including Catholic priests and everything else, to rebel, including our own race, including every have-not that they've brought into this country, to rebel against the establishment. And what I mean by the establishment here is the Israelite nations. That same establishment is also against Yahweh's heavenly establishment, because as it is on heaven, so it should be on earth.
Right.
But what I want you to understand, here's where it all translates to. You see, he didn't go over to the other lands of the have-nots and help them to be haves, because he couldn't. Mm-hmm. Because he's a cursed creature. The Jew is a cursed entity. In other words, they're cursed on the land. They can't farm, and they would never have a nation of their own. So they would be vagabonds and wanderers.
Okay, David, let me interrupt you right there, because I just want to prove the point you're making. Jewish bankers, starting with the Rothschilds, control trillions of dollars. How much of that money do they devote to feeding the poor? Or helping immigrants? None.
The have-nots.
Absolutely none.
Well, how much of that are they? They own half of the world's wealth.
Yeah.
How much are they donating to those have-nots that they pretend
nothing.
That they care about?
Absolutely
so much?
Nothing. Except they're making payments for them to demonstrate, like George Soros, right? But they're not doing anything about poverty. They create the poverty, blame it on economics or on Whitey. And then,
or on the haves,
or
right,
on the which haves, is Whitey. Right, which is Whitey, and then do absolutely nothing about it except gloat when the riots ensue. Back to you.
Okay, here's the whole thing. They're not going to give up their wealth and help.
No, they're
them.
Not.
They hate those people.
Right?
So what they're doing is whatever wealth they've stolen, all that wealth from the haves already. All right, they own half of the world's wealth. They're not going to give up any of that. What they want to do is they want to steal more of the haves' wealth.
That's right.
So they're bringing these people in here to steal from us through the welfare system, through any means that they can, stealing our jobs, stealing our welfare system, stealing money through the black budget, stealing money like they did with Dov Zakheim when they stole the $2.3 trillion. They did it again and again and again. So my point is this. Here's what it all translates to, and I'll be done with this. I want you to know and I want you to understand that everything that democracy promises, the whites, the haves, already have.
Yes.
We already had that. We don't need democracy to give us what we already have.
Right, of course.
Number two, that tells you a very simple thing, that democracy is not for white people.
No,
it's not for the haves. It's for anybody but the white people. And so the Jews want to steal more from the haves. They've already stole half of the world's wealth. They want to steal more from the haves and give it to these have-nots, because of course they'll be easy to steal off those have-nots. You notice how they have the black boxer,
right?
Like Spinks or somebody. And by the end of his career, he's got nothing left.
Right.
But he's got a Jewish promoter, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. Who stole all his money. Right.
Yep. Yes. And so the last thing I'll say here is this, and you need to know this. There's a reason why we are the haves, and there's a reason why the have-nots are the have-nots. You know, if you're the blacks and you're worshiping voodoo gods, and you're doing all this evil and killing each other and enslaving each other on the African continent and all the things that they do, you don't think they're going to be haves, do you? No, there's a reason why the have-nots are the have-nots. And that reason is not because Whitey kept them back. It's because of their own doing. Okay,
right.
So we are the haves because we have the promises of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And we are living in the land of honey and milk and honey, and all our milk and honey is being stolen from us, from the have-nots and from the Jews who are doing the whole thing. So that's what you need to know. So democracy, you want to keep on walking around and saying democracy is wonderful and they're trying to destroy our beautiful democracy out here and all this stuff. Democracy is an evil form of government. It's the Jews' favorite form of government, and it is not for white people whatsoever. That's really what I have to say. Back to you.
Yeah. Well, there's no doubt that democracy is something that has been imposed upon us from the outside. America is a republic, and the European nations have been republics and turned into democracies during the 20th century, which, by the way, the Jews call the Jewish century, as they were infiltrating and subverting all white Christian governments in Europe, America, and everywhere else. They have now infiltrated and subverted and are in total control of all white nations today, okay, because of
well,
their
how did they get that democracy, Eli? You know how. They got it in by their central bank mechanisms.
Sure. Yeah, and by changing the political parties, changing the nature of the politics, ignoring the local politics, right, and instituting national top-down politics, which is what democracy is. And it's the so-called two-party system, which but only both parties are owned and controlled by Jews. So it's basically a one-party system, a sham two-party system, and it's top-down, meaning democracy. Okay.
Right, because both sides are controlled by the same thing. You know, it's again, as we know, the Hegelian dialectic, the thesis against the antithesis, which causes the synthesis. That's why there's no difference between the party, because the synthesis has taken place. There is no difference between either party.
No,
the synthesis has taken place.
Yeah, as George Wallace said, there's not a dime's worth of difference between the Democrats and the Republicans, and he was absolutely right. And it tried to assassinate
them. That's your evidence that the synthesis has taken place.
That's right. Exactly. Okay, so just to get into, get our feet wet with the hyperinflation in Germany, I'm going to be quoting from a document, a full text of how Hitler defied the international bankers. Let me just preface this by saying that the war debt, the reparations war debt, which was imposed upon Germany by the Jews of the Versailles Treaty, put Germany in an impossible position. I think it created the debt given to the German people after World War One. By the way, and we proved that Germany did not start that war and had no, there was no justification for saddling Germany with that debt. That that total debt was at least three times greater than the German national product. So there's no way. In fact, what Germany was worth after World War One, it was still worth quite a lot because Germany had not lost that war. It was the so-called peace treaty that did Germany in, okay? The peace treaty dictated by the Rothschilds. So here is what this article has to say. Many people take joy in saying Wall Street and Jewish bankers financed Hitler. There is plenty of documented evidence that Wall Street and Jewish bankers did indeed help finance Hitler at first. But why? Okay. Was it to gain control?
I know why.
To gain control of the party? That's why Jews will invest in anything to gain control of it. Right? That's how that works, folks. Partly because it allowed the bankers to get rich. Okay. Well, initially it was a good investment, wasn't it? Because Hitler, you know, the Autobahn system? That was a nationwide Autobahn system, the first four-lane highway in the world, okay, with, what do you call it, easy on, easy off, no traffic lights, okay? That was invented by the Germans under Hitler, and partly in order to control Stalin. However, when Germany broke free from the bankers declared world war against Germany. We covered that, you know, in 1933. When we look at all the facts, the charge that the Jews financed Hitler becomes irrelevant. Los Angeles attorney Ellen Brown discusses this topic in her book, Web of Debt. When Hitler came to power, Germany was hopelessly broke. The Treaty of Versailles had imposed crushing reparations on the German people, demanding that Germans repay every nation's cost of the war. Not just their own cost, every nation's cost of the war.
Ridiculous.
Right?
Ridiculous.
Isn't it? These costs total 3 times the value of all the property in Germany. Well, I don't know if that includes the gross national product, but the value of the property, 3 times of all the property. Private currency speculators caused the German mark to plummet, precipitating one of the worst runaway inflations in modern times. No, private currency speculators. Which demographic usually gets involved in currency speculation, David? Do we dare mention that three-letter word again?
Can I just say one thing before you go on? People that are listening to this right now, I want you to realize something. I want you to realize that when you're looking at the Weimar Republic, you're looking at the American Republic, right?
Now,
its present condition.
That's right.
The reason why all these things, why the stock market is so high but the people are so poor is because of the speculators.
That's
the
right.
reason why the oil is so high is because of the speculators. Okay, so this was also talked about in the movie there, The Eternal Jew, that all of a sudden the speculators came out of the woodwork, and that was the beginning of the end of the Republic. Because speculators could just put any price on anything. If there was a raindrop, I remember at a time when the oil in America was, $120 or so a barrel. It was like $4 a gallon here. And if it snowed out in Ohio or something, that could cause the price of oil to go up a little bit because of travel conditions.
That's the excuse they use, right.
I'm being, facetious, but it was
That's literally how it works. They'll use any excuse to raise the price, right? Yeah. Yeah, it's all speculation. And people have no idea how much speculation drives an economy when Jews are in control of it. Okay? It's not like, the free enterprise. It's definitely not free enterprise when you have Jewish speculators, okay, running the show. All right, so she returns. I'm not sure if he's still quoting Ellen Brown. Private currency speculators caused the German mark to plummet, precipitating one of the worst runaway inflations in modern times. A wheelbarrow full of 100 billion mark banknotes could not buy a loaf of bread. Okay? So let's say the mark was worth 20 marks to a dollar. Okay? A wheelbarrow full of 100 billion mark banknotes could not even buy a loaf of bread. That's incredible.
Do you know what was happening at that time? That you could be on your way to the market with a wheelbarrow full of money.
Right.
And the price of milk and eggs were changing at that point.
Right.
While you're there, and you might not have enough by the time you get there.
Yeah. You went there to buy a dozen
eggs. Look at the next sentence, Eli. Yeah, right. The national treasury was empty. Well, what does that tell you all right there?
Yeah. It was just,
the Jew is in control, and the Jew is speculating in the market, and somehow the national treasury was empty.
Well, Germany had a gold-backed currency before the war started. What happened to all that gold?
You know.
Right?
What happened to all that America's gold? Supposedly, we don't have any gold anymore.
That's true. There's certainly none in Fort Knox.
We put all our gold in the I remember this was – we broke up the treasury. There was no treasury. There's just – now there's a treasury again, supposedly. But what had happened a long time ago is they broke up the treasury, and they put all of our gold in the – I think there's 12 Federal Reserve banks around the nation.
Right.
And there was just a treasury office, not a treasury department. There's a difference between that.
Right.
Now, all of a sudden, we have a treasury department because everybody's figured it out.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Well,
And they were, that's what's gone on. But where's the gold? There is no more gold. It's gone.
Right. Well, they moved it all to London primarily. That's why Britain is sinking into the ocean. Excess weight of all that gold. All right. Okay. So, countless homes and farms were lost to speculators and to private Jewish-controlled banks. Germans lived in hovels. They were starving. Nothing like this had ever happened before. The total destruction of the national currency, plus the wiping out of people's savings and businesses. On top of this came a global depression. Germany had no choice but to succumb to debt slavery under international, mainly Jewish bankers until 1933, when the National Socialists came to power. At that point, the German government thwarted the international banking cartels by issuing its own money. Now, Germany had been issuing its own money, but in the form of paper dollars that were tied to international speculators, and even some national speculators as well. And it included industrialists, and there are a lot of Jewish industrialists in Germany after World War I. In fact, Jews dominated Germany after World War I, absolutely dominated Germany. So because they were all the speculators, they were the leaders in the press, in the theater, et cetera, in banking. And the Jews were primarily responsible. But here's something I just want to bring up real quickly, David. Most people don't realize. It's the principle of first use. That whoever, let's say you own a Monopoly game, okay? And everybody gets, let's say, a billion marks to start the game. Well, then you spend, and the money supply doesn't change. So the value of that money stays stable as long as the game is being played properly. However, the dealer all of a sudden produces another billion marks. And he spends it into circulation, buys up Park Place and Kensington Avenue, right? And so he buys those at face value. Before the money begins to circulate in the economy and people figure out, hey, there's way more money in circulation than there was yesterday. And so it takes twice as much. Let's say he doubled the amount of money that he was originally available for the Monopoly game. Well, then after a few days, the markets will settle in with the new supply of paper money and all prices will double. But when he initially issued that money by spending it into circulation, he bought that property at fair value because nobody knew that there was twice as much money going to be in circulation the next day. So that's the principle of first use. So anybody who issues the money always gets fair value when he first issues it. Okay? So
okay.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Let me just say one thing about this, because we noticed that this is what happened with America is whoever has access to those money plates.
Right.
Now, there are people that they can pay to copy those money plates in almost exactly.
Really? Yes.
And we know, of course, the government's out looking for those people.
Right, but they are.
They might set up somebody that's a fake, right? Set somebody up to take the hit while they send those plates off to Russia. And that's what they did with American money. They are actually printing our dollar bills all over the world.
Yes, they are.
And you know who's doing this. In other words, you see, this isn't, again, the same thing as cheating. This is something I didn't really think about as much as they could just go to the Federal Reserve Bank in whatever country they're in and say, listen, I need this business, this particular – I've said this before. I need this newspaper, the Chicago Tribune. This guy is the last guy. He will not sell it to me.
Right.
So listen, just get – I've offered him – $10 million for it. He said, no, just give me $20 million. I'm going to go buy that.
Right.
And so they just give him, print up the $20 million or give him whatever's printed up. Right. He goes out and buys it. And really what that means is he stole that.
That's right.
And they're also destroying what you just said. They're destroying the currency as they're doing it,
right.
But the ends justify the means to these people. In other words, doesn't matter what it took to get to that business.
Yes.
They stole that business.
Right.
They stole the money. They stole the business.
Right.
It's not because they're smarter than us.
Right.
It's because they had control over a nation's currency.
Right. And that's why the Bible says you must have honest weights and measures. And that's what a stable currency is supposed to be. It's not supposed to be inflated all the time, which makes it dishonest and unstable. Okay? So the Jews are masters at this. They're always in charge of the printing presses so that, this is what the Federal Reserve Bank is, David. It's the first issuance company, right, of the inflation. Well, Okay, that's what it is.
It's the backbone. It's the backbone of democracy. Is really what it is.
Yeah,
it's
there you go.
It's the very mechanism.
It's the toilet of democracy.
I always talk about the visible and the invisible. And the visible is our government.
Yes.
Government. Okay, and they're the ones that take the heat when things go on. But the invisible is sitting right in front of your face. It's the Federal Reserve Bank.
That's right. That's the invisible government. Absolutely. Yes. So let's continue here. At that point, the German government thwarted the international banking cartels by issuing its own money, which wasn't tied to any speculators. World Jewry responded by declaring a global boycott against Germany. Hitler began a national credit program by devising a plan of public works that included flood control, repair of public buildings and private residences, and construction of new roads, bridges, canals, etc. All these were paid for with money that no longer came from the private international bankers.
Can I stop you there?
Yeah.
And what did they do? I'm just reiterating from Dresden. What did they do after the war? They smashed all that down again so that Germany could pay for it all again.
Right.
And the Jews could be the middleman in all the buildings of building all that back up again.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right. They did pretty much the same to America, you know, the baby boomers. You know, they came back after World War II. So, you know, they bought up, they destroyed all that farmland during the Great Depression, bought it up cheap, and then turned it into suburbs. Okay? Selling it at high prices. Okay?
Yeah, they're dirty. You see what you see there, too, before you go on. Again, as we have said, World Jewry responded by declaring a global boycott against Germany. You see, why did they do that? Because Germany went against Jewish interests.
That's right.
Remember we learned that a couple of weeks ago?
Exactly. Right.
Okay, anytime you go against Jewish interests, death and destruction and boycott will happen. But don't you dare boycott Israel because of the Palestinian conflict, or they'll bomb your country.
Right. Samson option. They will retaliate. Or what they usually do is they will assassinate your political leaders that suggest any such thing. Right.
They bombed Brussels, as I keep mentioning. I'm not going to let people forget that. Uh-huh. The foreign minister of Israel said that the reason for that Brussels bombing was the BDS sanctions against Israel, the boycott.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah, the Jews will blow up anybody, anything, anytime to get their way. That's simply all there is to it, folks. All right, so the projected cost of these various programs was fixed at 1 billion units of the national currency. To pay for this, the German government, not the international bankers, issued bills of exchange called labor treasury certificates. In this way, the National Socialists put millions of people to work and paid them with the treasury certificates, which is exactly what Lincoln did to finance the North's war against the South. It's exactly what Lincoln did. And Ellen Brown even admitted that Hitler was understood that's what Hitler did and followed the Lincoln model. Okay? Continuing. Under the National Socialists, Germany's money wasn't backed by gold, which was owned by the international bankers. Ah, that's where it went. It was essentially a receipt for labor and materials delivered to the government. Hitler said, for every mark issued, we required the equivalent of a mark's worth of work done or goods produced. The government paid workers in certificates. Workers spent those certificates on other goods and services, thus creating more jobs for more people. In this way, the German people climbed out of the crushing debt imposed on them by the international bankers. Question for you, David. Was there any interest on that issuance of German currency?
As far as I know, no, zero interest. I want to mention something about that while you're talking about that, though. In the American colonies, see, this is shades of history and why you should understand history. In the American colonies, Ben Franklin was the ambassador to England, and he went over there. And they said to him, why is America growing so wealthy so quickly? He said, because we have our own currency. We don't pay any interest. Mm-hmm. At that very moment, these Jews over in England, or whomever it is, imposed the Currency Act.
That's right.
One of many currency acts. There was the Currency Act of 1764, 1775, etc. As soon as they put the Currency Act in, the colonies went into depression.
Yes.
You see, that's right. They don't want success. What you have to understand is we could have all the countries in the world successful and with a stable currency, and we could all be have plenty of goods, plenty of money, plenty of trade. We could all have plenty of everything. There would be no poor or anything. But as long as you have, they don't want that. See, they know how to make that happen. They don't want that. Yes. That's what it tells you. Why is America, you know, you think that, well, of course, they were against America, right? But I'm just saying that they weren't, America, I don't know why they would obey the Currency Act. Why don't they just say, listen, that we have that you have no jurisdiction over us. It must be something that gave them some kind of jurisdiction to pass the Currency Act.
That's right. That's right. Okay. Well, I mean, of course, the British government totally controlled the colonies and with the threat of military force at all times. Right. So they were able to, you know, tell the states or, well, what became states, the colonies, to what money they can and cannot use. All right. So the same situation here with Adolf Hitler, Nazi Germany, that we decided to, we, the German people, decided we don't want your Jewish banker money. We're going to have an economy without it. And that's what the colonies were doing. They had an economy without Jewish debt notes.
And okay. they were becoming wealthy. They were flourishing.
That's right.
Like a great plant would flourish, just like an Israelite nation would flourish.
That's right.
And somebody doesn't want that flourish.
Exactly.
That flourishment, if that's a word. They don't right. want it to flourish. They want to crush it.
Yes. Amen. Amen. All right, let's continue here because this is really important. People, you need to know why Germany was declared war upon, again, by the same people, the International Jew Banksters, okay? Right, within 2 years, the unemployment problem had been solved, and Germany was back on its feet. It had a solid, stable currency with no debt, no inflation. They forget to mention no interest rate on the currency. At a time when millions of people in the United States and other Western countries controlled by international bankers, Jewish bankers, were still out of work. Within 5 years, Germany went from the poorest nation in Europe to the richest.
What is that telling you? That's a shade of the colonies.
That's
See,
right.
they went against, the colonies went against the Jews,
Bank,
you know,
Bank
interest.
Of England.
So
Bank of England.
One thing yes. I want to mention to you is that kept going until the War of 1812.
Right.
In other words, that was the climax of what was taking
right.
place there. They were doing very well. Then they put the Currency Act in, a couple of Currency Acts in. And pretty soon, Jackson said, we want these banks out of here now.
Right.
And he would not sign on the new bank. And
right.
so then there had to be war. Well, that's exactly yeah. what we're talking about. This is exactly the same situation. And America today is under trillions and trillions of, it's not even a real debt, it's a fake debt, but let's just say it's real. It's the same situation as Germany. You're just looking at shades of the same thing happening
right.
again and again and again in history. Why do we put up with this?
Right. And when Jackson refused to cooperate with the bankers, he actually paid off the national debt. That's the one and only time America had zero debt. Absolutely.
He's my
zero
favorite
debt.
President. Yes.
Yes.
That's why they hate him so much.
Well, they tried to assassinate him. And that was when they resolved upon fomenting the Civil War, when Jackson booted him out. Okay? That's when they resolved upon that. All right? So, interestingly here, Germany even managed to restore foreign trade despite the international bankers' denial of foreign credit to Germany. And despite the global boycott by Jewish-owned industries, Germany succeeded in this by exchanging equipment and commodities directly with other countries using a barter system that cut the bankers out of the picture.
That's what you would do if you were a farmer.
Right?
And we didn't need, in other words, there's the middleman again. I'm sorry to
right?
interject, but there it is. See, if you lived on farms and you had a farming community in America, which is the way Yahweh designed it, you would trade with your neighbor. Say
That's
you
right.
were great at you could do good cabbage and you did great carrots yeah. and some certain things.
Cabbage
and
for
your
cows.
Neighbor was great at corn and this and that.
Right.
You would just trade with each other and there was no tax, no state tax,
right?
No federal tax, no nothing.
No Jew
See,
tax.
This is another, you're looking at what they don't want. That's why the federal
exactly.
government got involved in the food, got involved in things they don't have any jurisdiction in.
Yes. Germany flourished since barter eliminates national debt and trade deficits, right? All right. Note here, Venezuela does the same thing today when it trades oil for commodities plus medical help and so on. Hence, the bankers are trying to squeeze Venezuela. Okay, well, since what's-his-name died, Venezuela has just gone into the
Hugo?
Toilet.
Do you think he really died? I heard that he went over. Somebody's trying to say, of course, they always try to demonize Putin, but they say that Putin has this city over in Russia that's special for these dictators.
Oh, really?
And they move over there when they get out of their dictator situation, and they live in that city.
Okay.
And they have very expensive stores that these dictators can shop at. You know, like it's a community for them. Whether this is true or not, I can't say. But that's one thing I did read.
Yeah.
Whether it's true or not, I can't say, though.
But Venezuela has turned into one gigantic socialist slum in the interim. It's a hellhole now. And riots constantly. Of course, you don't hear about this in the mainstream press because they don't want you to think badly of socialist countries. Right? Now, he says, Germany's economic freedom was short-lived, but it left several monuments, including the famous Autobahn, the world's first extensive superhighway system. Hjalmar Schacht, a Rothschild agent who was temporarily head of the German Central Bank, summed it up thus, and an American banker had commented, Dr. Schacht, you must come to America. We've lots of money, and that's real banking. Schacht replied, You should come to Berlin. We don't have any money. That's real banking. We don't have any debt notes, in other words. Schacht, the Rothschild agent, actually supported the private international bankers against Germany and was rewarded by having all charges against him dropped at the Nuremberg trials. In other words, Hjalmar Schacht was there to manipulate Germany as much as he could. This economic freedom made Hitler extremely popular with the German people. Germany was rescued from English economic theory, right? Which says that all currency must be borrowed against the gold owned by a private and secretive banking cartel, such as the Federal Reserve or the Central Bank of Europe or the Bank of England, rather than being issued by the government for the benefit of the people. Okay. Jumping down, Henry Mackow quotes from the 1938 interrogation of C.G. Rakovsky, one of the founders of Soviet Bolshevism and a Trotsky intimate. Rakovsky was tried in show trials in the USSR under Stalin. According to Rakovsky, Hitler was at first funded by the international bankers through the banker's agent Hjalmar Schacht. The bankers financed Hitler in order to control Stalin. In other words, finance both sides of the coming war, right? Who had usurped power from their agent Trotsky. Then Hitler became an even bigger threat than Stalin when Hitler started printing his own money. Okay? Hitler took
over. Can I say something there?
Yes, sure.
Now, Schacht. Okay, so Hitler's been accused of dealing with Jewish bankers.
Right.
But you see what it just said right there? It said that they dealt with him through a German named Schacht. Is he a Jew or is he a German?
No, he is a German. Yeah.
Okay, see? Yeah. So the Jews dealt with Hitler through this German man named Schacht. Now, I don't know if Schacht told him, was probably told not to tell him that. But why did they want to send him money? They wanted to ensure that Germany would go back to war. And so they were, that's where they got all their uniforms and things like that from and all the money to do it. But the key to the whole thing was, they wanted to negotiate with Hitler to send people from the German Republic right to Palestine, which did occur.
Exactly.
Through the Third Reich regime.
Transfer
it was
agreement.
A thing through the Jews and the Germans.
It's called
the transfer
agreement.
Hitler wanted the Jews out of his country. If he wanted to kill them all, he wouldn't have made such a deal.
That's right. The transfer agreement is something that's admitted to even by Jewish historians. That the international Jew banksters paid the Germans 2,000 marks per Jew to put them on a boat and send them to Israel.
So that proves that Hitler's intention wasn't to kill them all.
That's right.
So basically he wanted to get them out of his nation. That's what he really wanted
to
do.
That's right.
And isn't that what Netanyahu
I
finally
scratch
comes
your
out
back,
and admits?
You scratch
now.
Mine. Yeah, he did admit that. Yes. All right, Rakovsky said, this is very important. This is a... he's probably a Jew, too, Rakovsky. Hitler took over the privilege of manufacturing money, and not only physical monies, but also financial ones. He took over the machinery of falsification and put it to work for the benefit of the people. Now, he calls it falsification, which simply means issuing paper money, unbacked paper money. That's what
he means. Yeah, but you know what it means to me? It's an admitted thing that the machinery of falsification is what the Jews used to print
up
money.
That's right. Excellent.
In other words, Hitler took their machinery of falsification and put it to work for the benefit of the people. That's what it really means.
Without interest and without debt. They're not debt notes. They're simply paper money. And as long as you don't hyperinflate the paper money, the society will flourish because you've got stable money. Okay, and that's exactly what Hitler did. So he says, can you possibly imagine what would have come if this had infected a number of other states?
Well, let me say something about that.
Yeah, go ahead.
That's what the whole, when I started Hitler a Perspective, and I showed you what Triumph of the Wills looked like, if you watched the movie, if the rest of the world had seen that, that would have been the end of the Jew.
That's right. That's exactly
right. So they had to demonize this time in Germany. They had to make Hitler look like the most evil man in the world. They had to make everything. They had to make up the Holocaust story. They put everything they could, everything in the kitchen sink in this to demonize this great Reich, accomplishment of the Adamic people through Yahweh. In other words, what you see today is I've mentioned this before, that you see over in Asian countries, they'll do a Hitler parade.
Right.
With the regalia and everything.
Yeah.
And the thing, and they do that down in South America too. See, what it shows you is that if anyone sees that and realizes what it really means, they want to emulate it.
Right.
Even today, they still want to emulate it today. This is why the Jews are paying billions and billions and billions of dollars, even to this day, to promote the Holocaust.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It shows that people are, many people see through the Jewish financial system and understand that it needs to go. But they control our politicians and our media and just about everything else, to the extent that the truth can never get out. So this is one of the few times probably many people have ever heard of how Hitler went against the bankers, the Jew bankers, the specifics of it. Okay?
But the wonderful accomplishment of this, when you see Triumph of the Will, it's just mind-staggering. It's mind-boggling. Yeah. When you see the youth of the nation, they're a healthy youth.
Yes.
They're smiling. Everybody's in step. Hitler's talking to the youth. He respects the youth. I mean, it is just mind-blowing. If you watch Triumph of the Wills, you'll understand that this is the greatest achievement of the Adamic race, other than, of course, Yahweh and the disciples.
Yes.
This is the greatest achievement ever.
Yeah.
Because it shows what happens if you get rid of the Jew out of your country, and if you stay racially pure. Everybody worked in that nation.
That's
within
right.
four or five, now they say five, I usually say 4 years. So whatever, within 5 years, they went from being eating out of garbage cans to being the top economy in Europe.
Yeah, probably in the world, because America was still in the Depression. Okay. In reality, and this is the point I want to get to, in reality, the Weimar financial crisis began with the impossible reparations payments imposed at the Treaty of Versailles. And we named all the Jews who were responsible for the Treaty of Versailles, which included establishing the League to Enforce Peace, later renamed the League of Nations. Okay? This was all Jewish doing, folks. All Jewish doing. Halmar Schacht, the Rothschild agent who was currency commissioner for the Republic, opposed letting the German government print its own money. He wanted, of course, the Jews, the international Jew banksters, to print it. Quote, "The Versailles Treaty is a model of ingenious measures for the economic destruction of Germany."
He was a traitor.
But he wasn't able to do much because Hitler had him under control. "Germany could not find any way of holding its head above the water other than by the inflationary expedient of printing banknotes. Now, why couldn't the Weimar Republic do what Hitler did?
Well, they could have, but it would Jew control. They wouldn't have.
That's right. Exactly right. That's all there is to it, folks. Right?
The reason why the Weimar Republic fell down was because they wanted to make sure that Germany was in the worst condition they could possibly. In other words, you got to realize that we talked about World War One. We talked about the fact that when they put the Versailles Treaty in, they put that League of the League of Nations in as the first thing in it, and nobody even knows that except the people that wrote it and the people that dealt with it. Most people don't. I didn't know that. This is before the UN. They put the League of Nations in right as they killed the Tsar and his family.
Yes.
And he's the one that stopped it. His predecessor is the one that stopped it in the Congress of Vienna in 1915.
Exactly. That was the first attempt
at
a one-world
government.
So as
soon as they got rid of the Tsar, that was to be put in. The League of Nations was to be put in.
Exactly.
And
you
notice that they always put in legislation like the Noahide laws.
Right.
Before the Noahide laws are there, and we have the guillotines here, yet nobody's getting guillotined yet, but Noahide laws are in place.
I have a feeling that it's the Jews who are going to
I hope so.
Feel that sharp blade, not us. We'll make sure of that.
But you see, all I'm saying is that the Weimar Republic, was they brought it down because Germany must perish. Because they wanted to kill as many Germans as they possibly could.
That's correct. That's correct.
So, you know, it was a money-making venture anyway. As you're going through all this inflation, you don't realize that the Jews were stealing everything during all of that. That's why the Germans ended up eating out of garbage cans.
Right, right. Well, I have to say Schacht was shifty. I'm sure he sympathized with Hitler's economic policy, but since he was really an employee of the Rothschilds, he really couldn't. He had to do what the Rothschilds asked him to do. But Hitler's plan went forth anyway, despite Schacht. The article continues here. Schacht echoes the textbook lie that Weimar inflation was caused when the German government printed its own money. That's not true. In his 1967 book, The Magic of Money, Schacht let the cat out of the bag by revealing that it was the privately owned Reichsbank, not the German government, that was pumping new currency into the economy. Thus, the private bank, like our Federal Reserve Bank, folks, caused the Weimar hyperinflation, and that was controlled by the international Jew, folks. Okay? So that's what I wanted everybody to understand. These privately owned banks are all owned and operated by Jews in order to control our countries. The original Rothschild said, I care not who makes the nation's laws as long as I can control the money supply.
Well, that's what I was just going to say that. Give me control over a nation's currency, and I care not who makes its laws.
That's
and
right.
What that means is there's your central bank. They're the ones controlling everything. That's what he's telling you. And the people that make its laws are your Congress.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
So they don't care about them, basically, because the Congress, you will see them act this out. They'll go on a news thing, and they'll bring the Federal Reserve in, and $2 trillion was missing just a few years ago, and the government was questioning them. And they said, we're not going to tell you where it is.
Right.
We're not going to tell you what we did with it.
Yes.
Why is that? Because if they make the currency, and they don't have to answer to the government. They don't care about the government, the government making the laws, you see? But now there's a principle here with this man Schacht, too. I want you to see a biblical principle. If any man lose his life for my sake, he shall gain it, right?
Right.
But if any man try to save his life, he shall lose it. Well, Mr. Schacht, you see, he did exactly the opposite of what he should have done. He should have gave his life for the German Republic.
Right.
And Yahweh would have respected him, and he probably would have saved his own life in the future.
Right.
But what he did was he traitored against his own government so that in the Nuremberg trials, as we just heard previously, he was forgiven by the Jews.
Yes.
So he saved his own life, but now he's going to lose it because Yahweh said, you understand the principle? You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Yeah. you save your life in this world by being a slave to materialism, you lose it. You lose your life in the kingdom. Absolutely. Yes.
Well, that's what happened to him.
That's
you see,
sure.
He did save his life. He didn't go again. He
his
stuck
earthly life.
With the devil, the
right.
devil's offspring, and yeah. he got saved from being killed through the Nuremberg trials, but only saved for a little while.
Right.
You see, because
yeah.
now when he has to go before Yahweh,
yes,
he's
right.
a traitor.
He has to face the judgment day, right?
So he really lost his life. He really, yeah. he didn't save his life. He only got to stay alive on this planet for a little longer by doing
right.
what he did.
Yeah,
but he
yeah.
lost his eternal life, as far as I know, because that's the principle.
Yeah.
If he had gone against these Jews and they had killed him for it, he lost his life for his brother.
Right.
And he probably would have saved his
and he would have
life
gained eternal
in the future.
Life in the kingdom. Absolutely.
That's what I'm trying
right.
to say.
Exactly. Or now then he continues, then Hitler got Germany back on its feet by having the public government issue treasury certificates, which is exactly what JFK wanted to do. In fact, he had issued gold-backed and silver-backed notes, treasury notes, not issued by the Federal Reserve Bank. Well, you know,
service certificates, they had blue. I had a couple of them. I might still have them. I just can't find them.
Uh-huh.
They have blue. You know how on the dollar it has a green
yeah,
circle
green
thing on it?
Right.
Well, it had blue and it
really?
was called a, okay. a silver certificate.
Right, right. And Kennedy issued those. And as soon as he issued those, the Jews at the Federal Reserve Bank knew that Kennedy was going against them because those certificates would have put the Federal Reserve Bank out of business. Everybody would have been using that money instead of the fiat money of the Federal Reserve Bank. Okay.
It was issued. Ish was sued. See?
Right?
Ish sued.
Right? Very good.
Man, that, ish.
And it says here, Schacht, the Rothschild agent, disapproved of this government fiat money, which Hitler issued, and wound up getting fired as head of the Reichsbank when he refused to issue it. Nonetheless, he acknowledged in his later memoirs that allowing the government to issue the money it needed did not produce the price inflation predicted by the classical economic theory, which says that the currency must be borrowed from private cartels. Now, whose theory is that? Okay, who says that you must borrow money from Jews in order
Jews.
To have an economy?
Well, yeah,
right?
Well, no. Now the Judeo-Christians would say that too.
Now, yeah,
and
they would
the
too.
Government of Spain says that too. You must buy Jewish goods. You cannot boycott those Jewish goods. Remember,
yeah,
I told you about
yeah.
that. They passed a law in Spain recently.
Yes.
That you must buy Jewish goods.
Yes. Right. And then he quotes Archibald Ramsay in The Nameless War, debt. Particularly international debt, is the first and overmastering grip or hold that the Jews have on you. Through it, men in high places are suborned, and alien powers and influences are introduced into the body politic. When the debt grip has finally been established, control over every form of publicity and political activity soon follows, together with a full grip on industrialists, unquote. This guy is a true master of economics. Archibald Ramsay, the author of The Nameless War, a most excellent book. Okay. So Ezra Pound, he quotes Ezra Pound here too. Rothschild's ill-gotten wealth also effectively bought his family the first Jewish seat in the British Parliament and even membership in the British aristocracy. By combining the power of their own family's huge banks and other Jewish-owned banks, they could literally bring a nation's economy to its knees. By dominating international banking, they could set their own financial terms to cash-hungry nations and amass even greater riches. Because of the competitive advantages of Rothschild's international contacts, Jews dominated private banking throughout Europe. For instance, there was almost a complete absence of Gentile, that is, white, banking firms in Prussia in the late 19th century, which was before World War I broke out, proving that the Jews flourished in Germany in that century. In 1923, Berlin were 150 Jewish banks. This was during the Weimar Republic, folks. 150 Jewish banks. And only one non-Jewish bank. On the stock market, schemes similar to Rothschild's Waterloo ploy have been used for generations, finally resulting in the Center for World Trading, Wall Street, becoming dominated by Jewish stock and investment banker operations.
That was 11 non-Jewish bank, but that's okay.
Oh, 11. It doesn't matter. Okay. Yeah.
It really right. doesn't matter. You see how they've done this, ladies and gentlemen, is you must understand that this is the patterns of the enemy. Let's take this sentence, for instance, that by dominating, let me see right here. In the stock market, schemes similar to Rothschild's Waterloo ploy have been used for generations, finally resulting in the center of world trading. What is that ploy? That ploy was, in case you don't know, we've said it before, but just to reiterate, I want to point out that this is the patterns of the enemy. You yes. have to know the patterns of your enemy. So you understand what I just said in that sentence? That they use this same scheme similar to Rothschild's Waterloo ploy. What is that? They believed that he was keeping tabs through somebody else with carrier pigeon on finding right. out whether Wellington was going to win the war or whether Napoleon won the war. If Napoleon had won the war, everybody was going to go broke. So Rothschild knew that everybody was watching him because he was the top dog moneymaker, and they all just followed him, and they always made money in the past.
Yes. Yes.
So they trusted he got their trust that way. And then when he had their trust, he went on the big game here. You see, he got their trust on the little games preceding to this. But when it came to this big game here, he pretended he had found out that Napoleon lost the war. And he pretended that Wellington lost the war. And he right. started to sell up all of his stocks. And they all watched him. And they all began to do exactly what he did because it always worked before.
Right.
But he had other men going around and buying up those stocks from those very people on pennies to the dollar.
Right.
That's how he got control of the Bank of England. So that was that ploy.
That's right.
Is the exact same ploy they use. And yeah, I'll tell you one more ploy if you don't mind. The other ploy is they go to a nation and they say, "We'll lend you some money. You need money, right?" Sure. Okay, so now the nation comes to the point where they can't pay the debt because Jews within the nation are doing things to make sure that that debt doesn't get paid.
That's right.
You understand?
Of course.
And so then they come to him and they say, "Listen, we can't pay the debt." He's, "Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We'll give you some more money, but in exchange for that, we want your oil rights and your mineral rights." So then they do that, and the Jews within that country are working to make sure they can't pay those debts still.
Such a deal.
Then they come to him to the next time, and the next time they say, "Don't worry about it. We'll lend you some more money.
Right.
But now we want this, and we want that, and we want some of your good land, and we
right.
want some of your expensive
properties. So we can sell it to Russia?"
Yeah,
through Hillary
yeah, so
Clinton?
That, you know, that's how it's done. These are the mm-hmm. patterns of your enemy, ladies and gentlemen. And once you realize that, you'll understand that how to look for the patterns. I keep watching this enemy, how they operate. You know, they smile all the way through this. You can't look at smiles. You got to watch what they do, not what they look like they're doing, you see? So
right.
see what Rothschild had done there, and then you'll understand how he got them to trust them through small things in the beginning. You know
yes.
what I mean? Like, oh, wow, every time I follow and do what Rothschild does, I make all this kind of money.
Right.
But then he waited until they trusted him, and then on the big game, he socked it to them.
Right, right. Okay, I think we've pretty much explained how the Jews created this hyperinflation, which Hitler solved, and therefore the Jews had to make war against Germany because Hitler solved it. This is the primary question of economics, folks. Is your country ruled by Jewish bankers or isn't it? And if it's not, then the Jews will organize a war against your country in order to overthrow it so that they can regain control over your money supply. That is an axiom of economics. That's axiom number one. Okay? That's the way it is, folks. All right? Okay, David, I have to take a quick break. Do you want to, should I play some music or do you want to start in on the Jewish question in the New Republic, 1919 to 1924?
Well, if you don't mind, I have this document that I learned a very big secret from.
Okay.
And I wanted to share this with everybody. And this is on the document called, it says Microsoft Word. It says Weimar Republic, 1918 to 1933.
Okay.
Do you know? Right. Do you have that one? It's a PDF. I sent it to you.
Okay. Let me pick it up. Okay.
Because as I read things, you'll find interesting things. I know how it works. So,
yeah.
But I'm going to teach some. Okay, I'm going to teach something. I'm going to wait till you come back to teach this thing because I want you to hear it for yourself.
Okay, it's very blow similar. You away. Okay, it's very similar to what I had up. Okay, yeah. Go ahead with that. I'll just continue with the show, and I'll be right. Yeah, I see the photographs: Arthur Sulzberger, Ivan Besky, Michael Eisner, Robert Maxwell, all these Jewish robber barons. Robber barons and banksters.
Well, it says Microsoft Word up the top. That's what it says. But it has Jewish writing, the Weimar Republic. Am I looking at the proper one?
A Jewish domination.
No. This one's called the Jewish domination of Weimar, the Weimar
Germany.
Republic. Excuse
me. That's what I have.
That was a different one that I was talking about. Okay, Jewish domination of the Weimar Germany, 1919 through 1932.
Yeah, take over. I'll be right back. Okay.
You got it.
Okay,
ladies and gentlemen, we'll continue here. And wait till you hear what I'm going to tell you. So it says, it starts over here, an important note. During the period studied here, 1919 to 1932, the Jews made up only 1% of the population in Germany, yet they dominated business and politics. Today in America, Jews make up only 3% of the population, yet they dominate both business and politics. You see what I tell you, that this, what's going on in America is exactly what was going on there. The debauchery, the money stealing, the property stealing, the changing of the culture, the just communist vileness, everything. The failure of the 1905 Bolshevik Revolution in Russia resulted in tens of thousands of Jews fleeing to Germany. Obviously, this must have been their first attempt at the Bolshevik Revolution, because they did succeed the second time. Okay? Germany, so these Jews fled to Germany as they were chief architects of that first attempt to overthrow the Tsar. Now, I didn't even know about there was another attempt. I'll see what Eli has to say about that. They filled the cities, as the charts herein attest. Working in collusion with their co-racialists, the Jews quickly dominated the professions. With Germany in depression and the value of the mark wiped out, the Jews were able to buy businesses often at less than 1% of their true value.
Wow.
With a
1%.
Listen to this, Amazing. Eli. Did you know this? I didn't know this. The failure of the 1905 Bolshevik Revolution in Russia resulted in tens of thousands of Jews fleeing to Germany, as they were the chief architects of that first attempt. I didn't know there was another Bolshevik Revolution than the one that succeeded.
Guess who gave them sanctuary? Those evil Germans, right? Germany must perish. So Germany gave them sanctuary from Russia, and then the Jews turned around and simply annihilated the German people. This is
but I didn't
get.
Know that there was a first attempt of it.
Uh-huh.
I've never heard that anywhere.
Okay.
Okay. Right. Well, I mean, maybe you did. I've never heard of it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what happens here is, with Germany in depression and the value of the mark wiped out, the Jews were able to buy businesses often less than 1% of their true value. Do you see the Rothschild pattern there?
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so then it says, with a loaf of bread costing 100,000 marks, the Jews obtained loans from Jewish banks and bought up industry, newspapers, vast blocks of apartment buildings, all for pennies on the dollar. Hello, that is what happened in America.
That's right.
Why they orchestrated the Depression, the Great Depression of 1929.
Right.
They had warehouses full of food, and they never gave it to the people in America that were starving. They let them die. They let them suffer.
Right.
The same Jewish financial takeover has occurred in this country. The late Robert Maxwell got control of the London Daily Mirror. Maxwell, a Czech Jew, real name Jan Ludwig Hawk, secretly milked the paper's pension fund to buy controlling stock in Macmillan Publishers and other properties. The Chicago Tribune offered Maxwell the bankrupt New York Daily News if he would assume their debt of $150 million. Maxwell agreed if the Tribune would first pay him $60 million. He used this as a Ponzi scheme to pay off growing debts. As his empire began to collapse, Maxwell flew to his yacht in the Canary Islands. You see how they always go in flight when they don't succeed, they fly. So here's how your enemy works. Remember, you know, Bernie Madoff, who made off with the money? Right. He was going to fly, and Hillary was going to fly, too. Right. She made off with a whole bunch of money herself.
Yeah, let me she just was interrupt just caught. You. Yeah, remember what Hitler said about the Jewish state, what the Jewish state would be? He said it would be nothing but a sanctuary for Jewish criminals.
And isn't that what Israel is?
That's what it is, right?
Because if you do a criminal act in America, you kill somebody in America, if you can get out of that jail, you can fly to Israel. And Israel, who is, of course, our greatest ally, as everybody knows, will not send them back to us to be put under the justice system. Yes. They will not send them back, extradite them or whatever you want to call it. However, if somebody, some criminal comes into our countries, they demand that they be extradited to be tried, like Demanyuk and all these different people?
Exactly. Yes. But the Jews will not extradite a Jew to America or any other country. Never. They will not do that. It's a haven.
Yeah, isn't that funny for how Jewish criminals. They're our greatest ally, though?
Yeah, right. Yeah, of course they are. Right?
I'm going to go into the new Germany and Jewry here. It's just a little bit down the page.
All right.
The government of the new Germany have found themselves compelled to adopt certain legal measures with the help of which a certain limitation is to be imposed upon the position of authority exercised by Jews in all spheres of public life. Get that?
Right.
All spheres of public life. In other words, you know, a lot of people will tell you, well, it's only the Jews at the top. It's only the Freemasons at the top. Yeah, right. It's only the Mafia at the top.
They don't get supported by the little Jew.
Jews
what
in
nonsense.
All spheres of life.
Mm-hmm.
So pay attention to that, because that's one of the biggest lies. When I first started coming into the truth and the truth movement, they kept telling me that only the people at the top knew what was going on.
Yes.
When that's an absolute lie. Okay, so anyway, the fact alone is evidence that in Germany, quite extraordinary and absolutely unhealthy conditions existed in the distribution of preponderance between the German people and the Jews. Okay, they alone provide the key to the comprehension of Germany's Jewish policy. The German government had to adopt the steps indicated if they did not wish to watch inactively how the room to live and the possibilities of existence of the original population of German blood were restricted until the material existence of countless thousands was constantly more endangered by a minority who by no means had the same claim to wealth of the soil of Germany and the products of the German work as those whose ancestors were intimately connected with the soil. I just want to stop at that thing because there's the key to everything. This is what Yahweh showed me today. You're going to love this. The Germans are connected with the soil.
That's right.
I'm going to teach you something right now important about your enemy. I'm going to teach you something that Yahweh just taught me today, and that's exactly what it's all about. Connection with the soil. So now I'm going to go to page – I'm not even going to continue in that part, okay? I'm going to go to page – I believe it's 5. Yes. Okay. It says – there's a little illustration, Eli, if you want to see it there. It shows that, and it says 728 out of 1,000 Jews live in large cities.
Right.
Do you see that?
Mm-hmm.
And it says 292 of 1,000 Germans live in large cities. And right below it, it says this is the key to everything. I want you to pay attention to this. The Jewish dislike of connection with the soil.
Yes.
So the question I would have asked you was, and I don't know, I don't think you or I could have answered it, but I can now. Why do the Jews gravitate to the cities? I'm going to tell you exactly why. Number one, they dislike the connection with the soil. You see, they're not farmers. Number two, if you lived in a farmer's community, everybody knows everybody. You right. can't hide in a community like that. You understand? But you can go to the city, and you know how nobody talks to each other. Nobody knows everybody or anything like that.
Sure.
You can hide in the city. Nobody, not everybody doesn't know everybody like they do in small communities, in farm communities. The Jew gravitates to the city because he's a criminal, because he wants to hide. Yes. But the main thing is because the Jewish dislike of the connection with the soil. They have no connection with the soil. So it says, this also demonstrates the attraction of large cities for the Jews and corresponding flight from the country. Rich provinces with many towns, such as Rhenish province and Hesse-Nassau, are preferred by them, while agrarian country districts such as East Prussia, Pomerania, Silesia, or Schleswig-Holstein are persistently avoided. That's the extent of this differentiation in the presence of Jews in towns and country districts is demonstrated by the fact that on the average, all municipalities in Prussia have 21.5 Jews per thousand of the entire population, while the proportion for the country districts where there are also numerous medium-sized small towns drops to 3.4%. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you another thing that I just thought of. Of course, another reason why they gravitate to the cities is because that's where the power resides.
Of course it is.
Okay, I didn't.
That's where the banks. That's where the biggest banks are.
That most important thing.
That's always where the biggest banks are, right?
And that's where the government resides. Right.
But here, let me just stop you here because it points out the fact that Yahweh cursed Cain, and the Bible clearly says that the ground will not yield for Cain. And the Jews are the direct descendants of Cain. That's why the ground will not yield for them. On the other hand, Israel is said to be a farming country, nation. That, of course, we white Israelites are the biggest, most prolific farmers in the world, precisely because we are Israelites and not Jews. Over to you. Back to you.
Okay. Well, I mean, if you wouldn't mind reading some of this, the development of Jewry, but before you read it, let me just go down a little further.
Okay.
The vocations practiced by the Jews.
All right.
Okay, the inclination of the Jew to act as middleman in the functions of economic life, as for instance in commerce, is too well known for it to be a necessity to emphasize it. Yet, the statistics regarding the vocations practiced by the Jews provide such interesting information with regard to the individual vocational groups concerning the extent of the variety of the utilization of various vocations by the Jews and of their preference for and avoidance of them. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's look at this little chart here. what do you see there? Agriculture, gardening, stock rearing, forestry, and fishing.
Right. Okay, so the entire population, EP, is 5.5 million. And basic figures in percentages. So 29 or 30% of the entire population was engaged in farming or some sort of, you know, agricultural work. And then German Jews, 3,000, approximately 1.92%. Foreign Jews, 340, approximately 1%. And Jews proper, I guess, I'm not sure. I guess total number of Jews? Yeah, total number of Jews, 1.74%. Okay, which clearly shows that the children of Cain do not like farming, right?
The only reason they could do any farming, perhaps, is because if they were they were a German Jew, that they mixed with a white Israelite,
exactly.
They might be able to have some form of success.
Yes, a little bit.
Very little.
Very little. Okay. Yes. And that's very telling. That explains, resembles the curse of Cain right there.
Okay. Now here's another chart down here. I'll just read these real quick. Out of 100 Jews exercising vocations, 47.5 are independent. So they're independent businessmen, you see.
Right.
Entrepreneurs, yes. Right?
Mm-hmm.
33.8% are salaried employees. Listen to this. 9.2% are workmen.
Oh, yes.
And 9.5 are family members assisting in the undertaking. Okay, so what this tells you
is undertakers
they are in all spheres of life for a reason. There's a reason why some of the Jews must be workmen and why some of the Jews are in your companies. Okay,
right.
The reason why that is because they're subverting your company from within inside your company.
That's right.
But they also want to see what the company people are talking about them. So, like, if 9.2% are workmen and working in construction or something like that, they're right. Finding out what they are is they're saying them.
Yes.
They're there to find out what people are saying about them and find out any kind of secrets that might be going on. There's another little chart down here. There's all kinds of – this is a very – okay, here's a chart right here. Jewry in the German capital. Jewish doctors were 47.9%. Dentists, 37.5%. Chemists, 32.2%. Listen to this. Lawyers, 50.2%.
Mm-hmm.
Artists, 7.5%. Editors, 8.5%. Theatrical producers and managers, 14.2%. And actors, 12.3%.
And
I
guess
guarantee
what?
You in-
it's worse here in America. It's even worse here in America.
Way worse than that.
Yes.
Like lawyers, it's,
right?
Eustace Mullen said that 90-something percent of the graduates of lawyer school these days when Eustace was talking about it were Jews.
Right.
90 yes. point, I don't know if it was 96 or whatever. It's 90-something.
And they dominate the universities, the heads of universities, well over 90% there too. So it's very clear the Jews gravitate to those positions of power and authority wherein they can control us. It's just that simple. All right?
Before we go on with that, the influence of Jewry on mind and morals. It says here, medical men, 48%. School doctors, 43%. Welfare doctors, 68%.
Right?
Hospital
directors. Milking the system.
They
create the welfare state and milk
45%.
It. Yes. Yeah. It's
dentists,
amazing.
38%. Chemists, 32%. Lawyers, now this is even more, 54%. But listen to this one. Managers. Theater managers, 80%.
Right. Right.
Head doctors, you know, like psychs.
Yeah, right.
44%.
Shrinks.
Teachers
right.
in the medical facility, 50%.
Yes.
Teachers in the philosophical faculty, 25%, because there were some great German philosophers.
Yes, there were.
But this shows you the percentage of – see, when they were told to get in these positions, why would they want to have control over the medical thing? So that they could kill you with the cut and burn. The German
and charge the state. Right?
The German medical system, AMA, was built on – I mean, the American Medical Association was built on the cut and poison thing that was going on over in Germany. And you can see that the Jews were in control of much of this. So that's where the American Medical Association came from. When you read Eustace Mullen's book, Murder by Injection – he will show you how the American Medical Association was created and how they got rid of all the doctors that were trying to, heal you through herbs and through Yahweh's ways of healing.
Right.
And the ways that have always worked through all of time. And they brought in the American Medical Association, which this is of. So you can see that they were 48% of the medical doctors, medical men, were Jews.
Yes.
School doctors, 43%. I'm just going again. Hospital directors, 45%. You see what I'm saying?
Sure.
So dentists, 38%. So they had control of your health, welfare. So if you went into the welfare thing, since the Jews had the control of the government, they were probably paying them more than you would pay a regular doctor through the welfare system, stealing money.
That's right.
That's why they were welfare doctors.
Right. To elaborate on the point of Jews down at the lower levels of Jewry also being part of the scam and cooperating fully with the richest Jews, there was a friend of mine who was telling me about, he was a hockey player, an amateur hockey player. And on his team, there were a couple of Jewish guys who also played hockey. And so one day, now he wasn't friends with these guys, but one day they invited him to have a beer after the hockey game. So he went along with them, and he knew they were Jewish. But while they were sitting at the table, another couple of Jews joined the table, and the two Jews that he knew, his hockey team members, said, "Oh, by the way, he's not with us. He's not one of us," pointing to my friend, who is not Jewish, okay? So, of course, this made him feel really bad. This is how Jews treat the Goyim, right? So they immediately informed the other Jews that he was a Goyim and not one of them so that they would watch their language.
Well, okay? that is your proof. Remember that when Pastor Dan had that guy on and the guy said when he went over to Israel, he noticed that the Jews had two faces.
Right.
They have a face that they put on for the, you know, remember, I don't know who I was talking. I think I was talking to Paul about this. This Indian guy came into this business and he said, "Where's the guy with the fake smile?"
Right.
And everybody knew who he was talking about. I guess the guy wasn't there, but everybody knew what he was talking about.
Yeah.
It was the Jew that worked there.
Yeah.
And so basically what that guy said on Pastor Dan's show was that the Jews have two different faces. The face that they show you as the other people of the world, and the face that they show among themselves only.
Right.
Remember I told you in the book of the Mystery of the Serpent, they were in a Shriner's auditorium, and they thought it was all Jews there. So they actually admitted that the protocols of learned elders of Zion was Jewry's property.
Right.
Because they thought they were among themselves.
Right. Yes. And they didn't realize that there was some non-Jews to record the event, right, and make it public.
Praise Yahweh.
Yeah, amen, amen. And the Jews admit to controlling Freemasonry, and that they do publicly, you know, in many writings, okay? So this is what we're dealing, folks. And of course, the Jews will do anything possible to censor this type of information coming out, because they don't want you to know that you're a slave to the Jewish establishment. They just simply do not want you to know this. But that's why we're here at Eurofolk Radio, folks, because you need to know this.
Can I read a poem?
Sure.
Right from this article?
Okay.
The Lay of Ahasuerus. Ahasuerus, Wandering Jew.
Yeah.
Sorry, okay. I don't know that word.
Well, Ahasuerus, that's okay. Artaxerxes. Falsely claiming that Artaxerxes, the king in the Book of Esther, was a Jew. He was Aramean is the word I'm looking for. He was an Aramean. He was not a Jew. But anyway, the Jews claim the Book of Esther and claim Esther was Jewish, but she wasn't. But go ahead.
No problem. Yeah. And so basically, it's called the Wandering Jew.
Yes.
See. I strike no roots on earth. See, he has no roots in the soil.
Right.
You understand?
Exactly. Yes.
Okay. See, I strike no roots on earth. The ties of country, I have none. For me, no drugging homesick dreams cause my heart to flag and sink, for I am steeled by suffering.
Right. Yeah, other people's suffering. Yes.
Yeah. You mean our suffering.
Yes, right.
Ye drive me from your thresholds, yet of all am I most desired. Loud resound your cries of envy, for I drink from your wells, and I weigh your values.
That's right.
The sleek covering of my soul conceals what I suffered as a beggar, yet my booty grows and grows, and your maidens all acclaim me, the scum of the distant desert. Ye yawn over your pipes of coarse shag, while stolidly digesting your meals. Yet I have a clever touch and pander to your vices. Oh, yes, yes. He does.
Yes.
Drugs, you know, yes. Drugs, alcohol, whatever
yeah.
it is.
Pornography.
Your vices, he panders yeah. to them.
The prostitution, all of them. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. While looking on in exultation. And so I play my game with the exuberance of experience, the strange and terribly subtle. Who's the most subtle beast of the field?
Yeah, that's right.
The strange and terribly subtle final aims of my Asiatic blood to remain a mystery to you.
That's right. The average Judeo-Christian is utterly clueless about the true nature of the Jew. Utterly clueless.
So it says right here, one hardly knows what is more astonishing in this remarkable lyrical effusion, its absolute frankness or its frivolous cynicism. But in any case, the spirit of Jewry could not be expressed in words in a more undisguised and pertinent form than in this authentic example. The ideal of rootlessness. Yes. Proclaimed without any ballast of tradition or piety, while the ideals of other peoples are lightheartedly ridiculed.
Yes.
Wow, this is good stuff. This is a good PDF.
Sure is.
I'm telling you that there's gold in here. Just remember what we found out in here, why they gravitate to the cities.
Yes.
Because they're not connected with the soil. And it's admitted right there. They have no roots because they are vagabonds and wanderers. They have no roots and they do not understand being a nationalist because they have no roots. They have no understanding of the Aryan mind. The Aryan has roots in the earth. We are the we are the strong tree of Israel. Mm-hmm. We have our roots in the earth. While these are just wandering right. vagabonds who are a cursed entity.
The key factor here is we are the food producers. We, the white race, are the world's most conspicuous food producers. Yet the Jews do not produce any food at all, but buy it and sell it and profit from it.
Yeah, but you know what? If we were as evil as they were, we would seek to control the world's food.
That's
and
right,
then
we would.
We would not let them have any of it.
There you go. You just gave me a great idea.
Well, I mean, I told you that anyway. In other words, see, the poem of the ducks and hens is so incredibly relevant that we don't understand that when these Jews do their dirty things, and they've done this in the past and were thrown out of the countries of Europe 109 times, they were thrown out of the countries to their brother country so that they could do it to their brother. Mm-hmm. Now, if we had any brains... When they were thrown out and they came to the brother's door, the brother should have said, "Ye are a cursed being. You don't belong in our nations. You don't deserve to eat our food. You are a subrace. Go live with the subraces." But instead, because of our mercies, and they think that's weakness, but we have that mercy that our Father has.
Yes.
We let them in our countries and let them do us again.
Right.
And then when they do us again, we kick them out and send them to another brother. And the other brother doesn't know any better. If we had said at those points, "You do not deserve to live in our nations. We know what you do to nations. We don't want you to do to us what you've done to them. And so therefore, you are a subrace. You are cursed of Yahweh. You have no land of your own. You have no roots on this earth. Therefore, go live with the other subraces."
Yeah. That's where they belong.
That's as simple as it is.
But the sub-races are even better than they are, morally. Right?
Oh, yeah. And then animals are better than all of them.
That's right. Right? So what we're dealing with here, folks, is, as we have been saying, they're the fallen race, the race left here on earth by the fallen angels cohabiting with the daughters of Adam, way back in Genesis chapter 6, okay? They did survive the flood, which was not global. It was the rain was global, but the flood was especially terrible in Noah's territory. And that's why only the ark. And that's why we have records of the flood all over the world, independent records of all the nations that survived it. And that's why you see every single culture on the face of the earth has a record of the flood, because their indigenous population did survive it. Okay? So everybody now knows that this local flood had survivors, and where did they wind up? In Canaan land. The Canaanites. That's where they wound up. Okay? What did Yahweh ask the Israelites to do? Exterminate all those Canaanites. But we refused,
our mercies and our mercies and our willingness not to obey. In other words, what did Saul do? Saul, instead of killing the Jews, as Yahweh told him to do, he took some of them and took tribute of them, money, instead. So he obeyed Mammon instead of obeying Yahweh. That's why he had to lose his kingship.
Absolutely right. Yeah. That Yahweh told our ancestors to exterminate these vipers. And it's not because of disobedience to Yahweh's law necessarily. It's just that our people don't have the vengeful heart to, you know, because he told them to kill the babies too. And our people don't like the idea of killing babies. They don't look like little devils, right? But they are little devils. Vipers are vipers.
Well, they grow up and they come and get you.
That's right.
That's why you got to kill the babies.
That's right. That's why you have to kill the babies. And Judeo-Christians, being limp-wristed and pacifistic as they are, simply do not get it. That snakes grow up to be little snakes grow up to be big snakes. What don't you understand?
Not only that, but they were told to kill the animals in some of the cases. Yeah, why is that?
Because
there were probably lots of spirits living in those animals because of the condition of those people there. There might have been lots of spirits in those animals, or maybe they were actually doing hybridization in those areas, right?
Yes, they were.
I don't know exactly why. In some cases, Yahweh said even kill the beasts.
Right. Well, the book of Jasher says that they were hybridizing with the animals, okay? And remember the episode where the Israelites brought back a bunch of grapes that were the size of grapefruits or basketballs, right? Each individual grape. Well, they were hybridizing, right? They were obviously hybridizing, okay? Which is forbidden by Yahweh, okay? So every way you look at it, folks, these Jews are evil creatures, right from the pits of hell. And that's where they're going. They're going back to the pits of hell at the judgment day. It's very important that you understand these things, ladies and gentlemen, not get flummoxed by all these Jew lies, which has created this libtard society we live in today, which is nothing degeneracy up and down. Nothing but degeneracy up and down. Over to you.
I'm sorry. I thought you were done there, and I jumped in. Pay attention to this. See, I strike no roots on earth. Now, I explained that to you already, right? So they have no ground to dig into, no place of their own. Ties of country have I none. They're internationalists. You see, they don't have a tie of a country like America, somewhere where they have a place that they will stay or whatever might happen, right? Mm-hmm. Now, it says, ye drive me from your thresholds. That's what I'm talking about, the ducks and the hens. We drive them from our borders and get rid of them. Yet of all, I am the most desired. Even though that we drive them from the thresholds, we let them in because they bring
their
money and they pander to our vices, as it says later.
Exactly.
In other words, you know, the underground, you know, say if a man was a sinner and he said, geez, I'd like to have a lot of alcohol or drugs, or I'd like to have a prostitute.
Right.
Well, he wouldn't necessarily be going to a place in the city, maybe unless that was allowed in that city. But he could probably find a place where the Jews are.
The blue light, the Jew light district.
Their vices.
Right. Well, remember we talked about how the Jews degenerated the Weimar Republic with prostitution, and the Jews ran all of these brothels all over Berlin and in other parts of Germany, but primarily Berlin. This was entirely a Jew-run operation, which proves their degeneracy. Everywhere they go, they degenerate the morals of the nation. And even Benjamin Franklin understood that. He stated that.
He called them Asiatics, too.
That's right. Right? And wherever they go, they degenerate the moral character of the nation. So this was well known to the founding fathers. That's why Jews weren't allowed to be citizens. Okay?
But here's a purpose, maybe, in this thing. What he says here, he says, "For I drink from your wells." He also poisons them, as we
know,
right?
That's right.
But the next line, "And I weigh your values." See, in a way, these Jews, these evil Jews, like their father, they weigh our values. What does he mean by, "And I weigh your values"? Well, by getting you to commit to sin or to abstain from it, he finds out what your values are, your weaknesses,
right. Exactly.
Your strengths. He's testing you. He's just like his father, like he tested Yeshua, and his father tested Yeshua, but so did the rabbis. Show
That's
us
right.
a sign. Do this. Do that. Always weighing out our values. See, they don't have any values.
That's right.
Except for what they want to sell you.
Except the values of a con
but,
man.
You know, you understand right. what I'm saying?
Sure. Well, of course, there's a double meaning here. He weighs out the value of our money, too. Right?
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. Because he says later, he said, your maidens all acclaim me.
Right.
You see, they want to marry these rich Jews today
That's
in America, right?
Exactly.
See, while he says, the sleek covering of my soul, which he means by that is he's acting as he is a suffering person or a beggar.
Right. Right.
But all the while he says, yet my booty grows and grows.
Right. Yeah. Now snakes have sleek skin, don't they? Right?
Yeah. He says, yet I have a clever touch.
Uh-huh. Right?
Right? And pander to your vices while looking on in exaltation. What does that mean? When you exalt, that means you're jumping for joy.
Right.
That's a word from the Bible. So as he uses his clever touch, his serpent touch, to pander to your vices and get you to go against Yahweh and get you to sin, he looks on in exaltation. Do you understand what that means? You do, Eli. I'm just trying to say that, in other words, he rejoices in the fact that he gets you to sin and gets you to take part in your vices.
Yes, absolutely.
Like eating pig, right?
Yes.
Or like race mixing, or like being an antichrist. He's caused people to do that, and when he panders to our vices, he looks on in exaltation, like a drug dealer. You know, hey, you want to buy some drugs? No, I gave that up. I'm trying to stay away from that. Oh, come on. It's not going to hurt you. You can buy some oil. And then when the guy does it and takes the drugs and it destroys him, the Jew is jumping in exaltation.
Yes. Yes. Right. Right. Okay. This is really an outstanding article. I'd like to switch over to the Daniel Wilson, if I'm pronouncing that name correctly. I don't know if you had that one open, but this is very similar in title. It's The Jewish Question in the New Republic, 1919 to 1924, a five-year period where the one we're just reading from is to 1932. So this one, that one covers 13 years, and this one only covers 5 years. And,
yeah, because Hitler came in 1933.
Right.
So this is anything that preceded Hitler's rise.
Yes. But this only goes to 5 years right after the Versailles Treaty. Okay. And so the author says on page 2, in light of the possibly vindictive and crippling reparations which would be imposed on the Weimar Republic by the Treaty of Versailles, prominent members of the German Jewish community encouraged the Weimar leadership to revisit the Jewish question in March 1919. For although the Weimar Constitution spelled out the rights of German citizens, the leadership of the new republic held a conference in which they discussed how and whether those rights would apply to immigrants, who, because of the new territorial boundaries of the peace conference, now found themselves outside of Germany. Remember, we had an entire show based on the fact that Hitler was trying to recover German territory stolen from the German people, and the German people were now being forced to live in other countries under foreign jurisdiction. right? And in Poland.
And not good conditions either.
No, horrible conditions. They were genocidal conditions for the Germans in those territories, okay? And we just talked about the Danzig Corridor. This was going over Eastern Europe a lot, okay? And somewhat into Western Europe. The immigration and the fear of a major influx of Jewish immigrants flooding the borders required the Weimar leadership to analyze how they would respond and deal with the Jews, both within and without Germany. Now, this is the Jews themselves holding a conference. How do we deal with these Jews that are going to be coming flooding into Germany now? This paper sounds like they had this planned. This paper will analyze the early years of the Weimar Republic through historiography and mainly three primary sources: the Treaty of Versailles, and we've talked a lot about the Treaty of Versailles, the Weimar Constitution as it pertains to the rights of the German citizens as well as minorities, and finally the March 1919 conference, which was meant to discuss the Jewish question. Prominent members of the German Jewish community seized the opportunity. Where have we seen that before? Remember, we talked about the Congress of Vienna. What did Jews do there? They seized the opportunity of this international conference called by, I think it was the Emperor of Austria. They seized the opportunity to take over that conference and use it as the first attempt to create a new world order or a Jewen, all right? But that was, as you mentioned, scuttled by the Tsar of Russia. Okay? Prominent members of the German Jewish community seized the opportunity afforded them by the imminent reparations of the Treaty of Versailles to get the Weimar government to take action in regards to the Jewish question and stopping the discrimination against Jews.
May I say something?
Yes.
There's a problem with the Weimar Constitution already. There's a problem.
Yes. Yeah, it's not
as
German.
As it pertains to the rights of the German citizens as well as minorities.
Yes.
What this Constitution was written, it was probably written by Jews. I'm going to tell you that I believe I even read it was written by a Jew. Okay?
Yes.
Now, number one, what does the minorities have to do with the German Constitution?
Exactly.
I told you this is democracy again.
That's right.
And I told you that the democracy is not for those German. I'll guarantee you that the Weimar Constitution was not the benefit of the German citizens, but it was to benefit the have-nots, as I spoke about in the beginning of the show.
Yes.
The minorities.
Yes.
That's a problem. There's your big problem right there. So, sorry, but
yeah,
I think that's important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, so what we've been trying to tell people is that the Jews dominated the Weimar Republic, both intellectually, culturally, entertainment-wise, financially, and every other possible way. That's why it was such a disaster. Okay? Plain and simple. That's why it was such a disaster. And they're trying to do the same thing to America as we speak, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you're paying attention. The Jewish question has referred specifically to how governments, in this case Germany, would respond to the Jews in the laws and the rights that governments would award to the Jews, but also particularly in the limiting of the discrimination which had been so rampant throughout Europe toward Jews. It wasn't just Germany that was anti-Jewish, it was all of Europe, for obvious reasons, folks. Christians hated Jews in those days, and Jews hated Christians. There was no love lost between Christian and Jew. That didn't come until Christian Zionism. That didn't really come
until Judeo-Christianity.
And there you go. Exactly. There was no such thing as Judeo-Christianity before the 20th century. There was no such thing. The Weimar Republic, like much of Europe, had many citizens who were Jews and had to decide whether to expand the rights of minorities to equal those of German descent. To the Republic's credit.
Equal.
Yeah. Now, to the Republic's credit, he says, it was actually a major fault and drawback and the reason for its decline. The government did grant full citizens' right to the long-denied Jews, but only those who now lived within the new borders of the state. But that was bad enough, right? Because
They
will simply take advantage of the new rights they have to exploit the German people further, which is exactly what they did.
And who's right? Who gives the Jews the right to decide whether to expand the rights of minorities equal those of German descent? Who gave them that right?
Yeah.
Excuse me for getting a little perturbed.
Yeah, just like Barack Obama.
The German people didn't give them that right.
That's right. Yeah, they just take that right because they have the money to buy these special privileges that they assume.
But do you see that today now? Here we are yesterday. This is yesterday.
That's
and
right.
You see, I told you democracy is for the have-nots to bring equality and all the things that we already have to give
yes.
that to the have-nots to make them equal with us, the American people.
Right.
The same thing,
right.
The Jews have decided all this.
Yeah, now remember when we talked about the Versailles Treaty, we pointed out all of the major Jews who accompanied the major heads of state from the countries that attended. So Wilson had House, France had another Jew, Germany had a Jewish representative, Russia had a Jewish representative, virtually every country. And then the Jews had their own Zionist delegation at the Versailles Treaty. It was Jew up and down the line. Now we have German Jews from Germany. Listen to this, folks. So leading figures in the German Jewish community grasped the moment when the German government was still reeling from the lost war and the upcoming harshness of the Treaty of Versailles. The German Jews called for a conference to discuss 6 points which made of their wish list their deepest desires.
6 points.
6 points.
Six.
The six-pointed Star of David.
Six-pointed, yeah, exactly. I'm sorry.
Yeah, right. They did not necessarily believe that the points would be accepted, but they presented it in such a way that the Weimar government could not refuse. Now, how would that be? Okay, with money? Right?
With debt?
Yeah. The leaders of the Jewish community in Germany stated that if the government formulated a plan, which the government could then present to the League of Nations, then perhaps as a result of their intuitive action, the League of Nations would be more lenient in the upcoming treaty and reparations which were to be imposed upon Germany alone. Now, we found out that the League of Nations and the Weimar Republic were not lenient at all to ethnic Germans. At all. The ethnic Germans were being starved to death.
The League of Nations existed.
Right. The ethnic Germans were being starved to death. Right away as a result of the Versailles Treaty. It continues. The Weimar Republic was established in 1918 after the German Revolution and thus ended the German Empire. Well, who started that German Revolution, David? Do you remember?
Jews. Oh, no, in the second one. I don't know who started it in the first. Of course, it's the Jews, but I mean,
yeah, right.
It came from England and it came from America, of course, but
right.
I mean, if you're talking about the second one, we know that
the one
it was
right
a
after
Jew
the,
that was paid,
right.
that was paying Churchill through a focus group, but
right.
the First
right.
World War, which yeah. it depends on, it's the same people paying it no matter which war it was,
right?
Well,
in
a sense.
Right after the Weimar, right after the Versailles, it was Rosa Luxemburg, the Jewess. She's the one who instigated the communist revolution. That's what he calls the German Revolution here, okay?
From within Germany.
Yes, within Germany, exactly. So, again, more Jews, right? And Liebknecht, I think, was another Jewish leader of the communist revolution in Germany, which forced the Tsar to flee Germany for his life, okay? Because he was afraid that what was going to happen to him was the same thing that happened to the Tsar of Russia, namely assassination at the hands of Bolshevik Jews, okay?
Oh, right. I know what you're talking about. Just to bring you back into the
yeah.
area, they were spreading out things in the German Navy, spreading rumors
right?
that lies and rumors that were that the Tsar was this and that, and he was going to abdicate,
right.
and he actually finally did abdicate. So that ruined the German morale at the end of the war.
That's right.
I remember what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And it was the Jews who orchestrated all of that. Okay. Of course, this author is not going to talk about Jews telling lies, right? But he's talking about them taking advantage of this situation, taking advantage of that. Remember what Rahm Emanuel said? That son of a Jewish terrorist. Never let a good crisis go to waste.
Yeah. Well, remember what I read to you last week, too, that they take advantage of divisions within the GOP party or divisions in us. They take advantage of divisions as far as, like, when you look at democracy, I told you it's a division of the public immediately.
Yeah,
why do you
right.
think these people that are all doing all this destruction across the country, these lefties,
right.
they are a product of democracy. Yes. They are a product of division.
Yes. Guess what?
You must understand that.
Yeah. Guess what the fifth word is in the next sentence. It was the first democracy, your favorite word, in Germany. And according to Detlef Pukert's The Weimar Republic, it struggled to prove its legitimacy and claim to power. Why would it struggle? Because it was run by aliens.
And because it's the vilest form of government, that's why
right.
It would struggle. Why is it struggling in America? Why do we want to give this form of government to the rest of the world? Why do we bomb them into the Stone Age to free them and give them democracy and a central bank?
Yes.
I mean, come on, let's use our brains here.
Right?
Doesn't the military realize we've got great military men in this country? I'm nobody. I've always been nobody. And if I can figure this out, how come they can't figure this out?
Yes, right. Well, democracy is the primary export of the Zionist state. Put it that way. Okay? That's what they're selling the world. And it's not freedom, folks. Don't even think that democracy and freedom go hand in hand. They do not. Democracy and slavery.
It's slavery.
That's
tyranny.
Right. That's right. It's total tyranny. The beginning of the Republic was not made obvious by an event that could be used as a political unifying symbol of a pivotal moment in the country's history, such as the American Declaration of Independence or the Sedan Day after the creation of the German Empire in 1870-71. Instead of having such a momentous event, Philipp Scheidemann, the deputy leader of the Social Democrats, gave birth to the Republic quite by accident and only to prevent the Soviet-style revolutionary Karl Liebknecht, who was that communist, along with Rosa Luxemburg, from taking power as he marched toward the Reichstag with his fortunes. So, Karl Liebknecht was trying to take over the country with an armed force, a Jew. All right? Scheidemann decided that the development had to be prevented and quickly. So he impulsively declared the formation of the new republic. However, when Scheidemann proclaimed the republic, there was no constitution and not even a plan for one. Scheidemann, as deputy leader, had no authority to declare a new government, and Friedrich Ebert banged his fist on the table and yelled at Scheidemann, "You had no right to proclaim the republic."
Yeah,
I'll
because
bet.
We want a democracy. We don't
That's
want a republic.
That's right. That's right. There you go. Now you're beginning to know the difference, folks, between a republic and a democracy, right? A republic is declared by the native people. Democracy is imposed by the Jews.
Because that's an international form of government.
That's
Understand
right.
that as we bring democracy to the last four or five countries, that the whole world is a big democracy now. You know the Federation of Planets in Star Trek?
Right.
Okay, that's what this, when you hear federal or federation,
right.
That's a Jewish word. All the ABC entities are part of the federal or federation, the Federal Reserve, the federal.
Yes. I had no idea that this proclamation, this spontaneous proclamation, is what created the German Republic. This is interesting. However, the commotion which the proclamation had caused could not be halted as the army did not know whom they should obey. So the impulsive proclamation of the deputy leader of the Social Democrats could not be taken back. A republic had to be formed. Okay. Well, we should have sent them our Declaration of Independence and our Constitution, right?
Jews would have loved that.
Oh, yeah, they sure would have loved that, right? When the war was lost, the League of Nations stipulated that a new government be set up. The treaty, of course, by Jews. The Treaty of Versailles.
And what kind of government was that, ladies and gentlemen?
Oh, yes.
A democracy.
Didn't Wilson say he wanted to make the world safe for what?
Democracy. Our beloved. Didn't that start with about him? I'm trying to find out who the first man to quote, our beloved democracy.
Right?
I'm not sure if it was Woodrow Wilson or if it was him.
Yeah, who?
I want to do a study. I think, you know, what we should do also is we should do a show on the New Deal because
right.
I learned in school and I don't really know what it is, although I can guess what it is.
Yeah. Well, you know.
See, the New Deal has changed, isn't it, Eli?
Sure. It's a Jew deal. It's still a Jew deal. It's an old deal now, but it's still Jew deal.
I want to study into it and I want to explain it to the people so that we all know what Roosevelt's New Deal really was.
Yeah.
Why did we need a New Deal? Told you, we don't need a new deal. We already had a deal with Yahweh. We already had freedom. We already had our own everything. We don't need democracy. We don't need a new deal. We don't need change from Obama.
Right, right.
You understand? One who needs changes and new deals are the have-nots and the Jews.
Yeah. Notice that none of these politicians use the word republic anymore. They always use the word democracy. Okay? And our country is not a democracy. It is a republic of we the people, not a top-down democracy of we the Jews. Okay? So let's continue here. We got about 5 minutes left. When the war was lost, the League of Nations stipulated that a new government needed to be formed. But they had the war guilt clause. The guilt clause entailed the loss of 10% of Germany itself to outside forces, causing a mass of 12.5% of the population to suddenly find themselves out of the new borders and in different countries.
Division.
Germany was forced to concede territories to Belgium, which is why Hitler invaded Belgium, Czechoslovakia, which is why Hitler invaded Czechoslovakia, and Poland, which is why Hitler invaded Poland, West Prussia and Upper Silesia. Hitler was only interested in reclaiming what the Jews of the Versailles Treaty had stolen from the German people.
Because those people were being treated horrendously.
That's right. Genocidally.
And he actually tried to do it. I want to remind you that he actually tried to do everything that he did by diplomacy.
Yes.
And generous diplomacy, by the way. And I mean, see, you never hear about any of that.
That's
you heard
right.
about it when we talked about it on the show, previous shows, that he tried to do everything with diplomacy because, like I told you, the Germans were on a super high in their nation. They didn't want to go to war. There was no reason to go to war. Why would you want to go to war when you've just got everything back? Your nation's happy. Your youth is healthy.
Everybody's working.
Everybody's happy. The economy is great. Why would you want to go to war? Only countries that are depleted and down and would need to go to war.
Yeah,
so you got to use common sense here.
We talked about that. Germany was maneuvered into war by Russia, France, Britain, and Poland, all ganging up on Germany to deprive the German people. German people were not being given justice by these four nations, and Germans were being massacred in the Danzig Quarter and elsewhere. We only talked about the Danzig Quarter where this was going on. And so Hitler had to do something to protect his own people. It was a defensive war, folks. Because, now, just one more quotation here. Germany was forced to concede these various territories. The high reparations caused severe resentment in the Weimar Republic government and among the German people toward the League of Nations. No joke. Although the French, who were the ones who really pushed for the war guilt clause, knew that there was little chance that Germany would be able to pay back such a large debt. The hope was that Germany would be so limited in its ability to regain its economic superiority that it would be unable to initiate a new war with France. Well, they didn't figure on Adolf Hitler, did they? All right? Folks, now do you understand why the Versailles Treaty is the primary, if not the main cause, only cause, of the rise of Adolf Hitler? Historians agree.
What did you read here a little earlier, in case you didn't point this out? The Versailles Treaty decided that the Germans should have a new government.
Right.
The Versailles Treaty decided that.
That's right.
Not the German people.
It's the Jews. The Jews decided it. And it should be what? A democracy.
Of course, it should be a democracy.
All right. Where the Jews get the right to vote.
Our beloved democracy. We love slavery.
Where the Jews are full citizens and have the right to vote. Okay? That's a democracy. Right?
And where the have-nots get to be equal with the citizens of the indigenous, the indigenous citizens of the country, where the have-nots can come and steal legally from the inhabitants of the country.
And
steal, I said. When you come into a country and you take welfare reparations and you do nothing and you just take from it, that's stealing. I don't care if it's given to you through the government. You're a thief.
Right. And the white people are the haves, and the illegal immigrants are the have-nots. Therefore, the haves must give what they have to the have-nots, according to Saul Alinsky.
Yeah, even though the Jews have half the world's wealth.
Yes. The white taxpayer.
See, they care so much about these have-nots that they don't give them anything of their portion of the world's wealth.
That's right.
Nothing.
That's right. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Not a dime. Yet these Jews are God's chosen people, and we must hang on every word they say, which everything they say is.
Haven't they been a blessing to our nation and Germany, as you can see?
Such a
blessing.
Haven't
they been a blessing to the world? I can't understand why anyone would want to kick them out of their country.
Yeah, right.
I just can't figure it out.
And it's only happened over 100 times. So it's just, why? If they're such good people, why would they be kicked out? Right, folks? All right, David, great job today. This has been a very enlightening show, how the Jews created the Weimar Republic and have been manipulating the German people until the rise of Hitler and even after with their declaration of economic war against Germany and are doing the same to America today. That's the lesson. And still to Germany as well. Thank you. All right, folks.
Still paying reparations.
Yeah, exactly. Folks, that's our show for today. Thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh, pass the ammunition.
When you're riding after rattlesnakes, you've got to be tough. You've got to be